Direct those search lights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Friday's Community Spotlight. I have in the studio today Helen Cotty. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, Helen has a very interesting story. She's written a number of books on a series called Hanged in Jails, Hanged in Mudgee, Hanged in Armidale, Hanged in Tamworth, Hanged in Dubbo, and a biography of John Daroon Dick, the governor of Mudgee Jail. Now, Helen, I'll just start by asking you, you're an Armidale resident?
I am.
And how long have you lived in Armidale?
I've been here 5.5 years. I moved up here from Mudgee, which is my hometown.
And what did you do in Mudgee?
I owned a large antique centre and bed and breakfast and coffee shop. You name it, I tried it.
I read somewhere that you did some nursing.
I did. I started nursing when I was 17 and 9 months, which was the beginning of my 10-year career of nursing here and in the UK.
Glasgow, you went to university?
I went to university at Glasgow. I was an army brat, so my husband was in the army, so every time we moved it was an adventure, and I decided to study business economics at Glasgow University.
And then you came to Australia and went to Mudgee?
I did, after 23 years.
Now tell me, I did mention at the beginning that you've written a number of books about hangmen in the different jails over a period of time, but we were talking off air about what may have sparked this interest in A, hangmen, but B, in researching hangmen. So tell me about that.
I think it was possibly the realisation that there was a jail in Mudgee that hanged four men, and that I was born and bred in Mudgee, but I never knew that there was a jail in town. And because I was always interested in detective stories and how people got caught, and also, too, one of my great uncles was murdered in the town, and it just sort of all came together like that. So
You also were talking about the shop that you owned.
Yes.
And that may have been the impetus to start your journey of research.
Yeah, research. The building was 1857 and people were curious about what its function was. Is it a pub? And it wasn't. It was a general store. And through that research, I found in the first 20 years of the building that we had a murder and incest and a suspicious death. Actually, the suspicious death was a man who died from not a visitation of God, but the effects of rum. He drank the stock. And from that, the murder particularly was of a baby, and I got the court records of that murder, and it just followed through the research with the building.
So it's probably suffice to say that because nobody knew anything about this building and you owned the building and
yeah,
you plied your trade, your antiques and shop there, you went on this journey to find out more about the shop, which then led you into a lot more.
Oh, yes. I think I have a curious mind. I find something out and I want to know more and I want to know more. And then the more people I talk to them about it, they'd say, oh, but did you know four men got hanged in Mudgee? That piqued my curiosity and I had to find out about them. Funnily enough, the first two men hanged at the jail actually built the gallows, and they didn't want to do the job. One was George Pitt. He didn't want to bring all the demountable parts of the gallows to the jail because he said it was really bad luck, so he dumped them on the road outside. And the other fellow, he didn't want to build. His name was George Rope, but enough money allowed him to build it, and both those men, George Pitt and George Rope, were the first two people hanged on the gallows.
So let's talk about hangmen for a minute. So tell me about what made a hangman in early Australia before 1870.
The hangman, if the jail had a person to be executed, they touted around and asked people like the warders or anybody who was incarcerated in the jail, oh, enough incentive, we'll shorten your sentence or let you go if you go and hang this fellow. And a lot, it was often taken up, and a lot of their botched executions, because we had one decapitation, a lot of strangulations. And so it was decided in the early 1870s to employ a full-time executioner. No training. You know, you could either do the job or you couldn't. And the first man to take up the position for New South Wales was Robert Rice Howard, locally known as Nosey Bob.
So just tell me on the art of hanging. You said a botched hanging. So what actually constitutes a hanging, and what is a botched hanging?
A hanging is a clean break of the neck, where the drop is instantaneous, felt that there was no pain attached. It was instant. A botched hanging is where the person is left struggling on the end of a rope, strangling.
Bit morbid, a bit gruesome for a Friday morning, but I hope our listeners will give us some leniency, because we are talking about a practice that was, for how long would have been going, the practice of hanging in our jails?
The first execution happened not long after the colonisation of Australia, and it was the method used. We used all the, I'm trying to think of the right words, the laws brought out from England. So they hanged in England, we hanged out here.
So when was the last hanging?
Gosh, now you got me. I think in the 1900s, I think 1950s, I don't know if it was Ronald Ryan. I'm not sure.
Mostly New South Wales that you've focused on?
I only do New South Wales. If I had to do every state, I won't live long enough to write the stories.
So let's just jump to when you came to Armidale.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been doing in Armidale over the 5 years, 5.5 years?
Yeah, I came up to Armidale because I retired. I work longer hours now, but my family was up here. And I decided if I'm going to retire, I'm going to write full-time. And that's what I did.
You just mentioned that you're working harder now than you did before, and I think a lot of people, when they retire, have a couple of friends that they say they're so busy, now that they're retired, they're more busy when they were employed. Now, tell me, what do you do with your time in Armidale?
Oh, I split it up a little. I work 2 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, at Vinnie's on Bundara Road. I have been renovating the house for 5 years because I bought a house I could afford, and so I'm doing that as well.
So tell me about volunteering at Vinnie's. Tell me what you like, and then tell me what you don't like about volunteering at Vinnie's.
Goodness. I found that when I first came up here, it was hard to make friends. I'm a single person. I don't go to pubs, etc., etc. And a lovely lady, Sandra, at Vinnie's, would encourage me to come, and she'd say, just do 3 hours, just do 3 hours. You'll love it, you'll love it. So I did. I tried it. I do love it. I love the people who work there. I love the work we do. And I see the results of what we do, helping people in the community. Perhaps what I don't like is the idea that people think it's okay to use Vinnie's as a dump. They drop stuff outside our gates. because they're too lazy or don't want to pay the money to take it to the tip. So I do love everything about Vinnie's. I just don't like what people do.
And it'd be right to say this is an ongoing thing on a lot of charities across the world, I suppose, people dumping stuff. And it's the charity that actually has to foot the bill for getting rid of the rubbish that's dumped there.
That's absolutely correct. The people who have to get the truck, go out the front, clean it up, all the rubbish, it's not just clean rubbish, it's awful rubbish, get it to the tip, we get charged, and that's money taken from the community that we're trying to help.
I think on this, on a final for that note, we haven't actually come up with a solution for that yet. Hopefully, hopefully people's minds just think about our community and what the organisations like Vinnie's are doing, and stop dumping rubbish out the front. Take it where it's got to be. Put it in your dumpster. There are other methods than just dumping the rubbish. Now, let's just get back to the hangman, the more morbid side of this interview. So let's go back to Nosy Bob. Nosy Bob, Robert Rice Howard, who was the first salaried executioner in New South Wales. Who gave him the job?
It was the governor of Darlinghurst Jail, a fellow named Cowper. He was instrumental in getting a salaried executioner appointed because the unreliability of using someone who is not professional, I'll put it that way, was a big problem for him. So he campaigned to have a permanent executioner for New South Wales. And Nosy Bob actually worked at the jail. He used to serve meals at the governor's table. He would do the gardens, look after the animals, whatever was required. And then he had an accident and applied to be the executioner and won the job.
So why was he called Nosy Bob?
In the early stages of his career, he was a cabman. That means that he had a horse-drawn carriage, and he did the Darlinghurst area, and he was reputed to be tall, good-looking, and all the ladies loved him, and he would take them anywhere they wanted. All the important guests that came to Australia, he was the cabman. And one night, his horse, in a storm, after a crack of thunder, hit him in the middle of the face and took his nose completely off. And that ruined his career as a cabman. And afterwards, the journalist called him Nosy Bob, the hangman.
Oh, very interesting. Now, tell me, the first book that you wrote was in 2020, other than other things that you were doing before, but the first actual book in the series, in the Hangman series, Hanged in Mudgee, you wrote in 2020. Now, can you tell me how many were hanged in Mudgee and who they might have been?
Okay, you're testing me now. There were four men hanged in Mudgee. The first two I've already spoken about, George Rope and George Pitt. There was an Aboriginal fellow named Albert, and he thought that after we do this today, are we having breakfast tomorrow? His comprehension wasn't there. And a Chinese gentleman.
And what were their crimes, just ranging? What did they do?
Most of all the crimes in all the 72 people I've researched are murders.
So Mudgee only had four. Was it in operation for a long time? What sort of dates would have it started, the Mudgee jail?
The jail started, the governor was appointed in the 1860s and it was pulled down in 1932. But it was a small jail. It was a country jail. And as jails go, Bathurst became the major jail, so a lot more people were hanged over there than Mudgee.
So this links back to that shop that you had when you lived in Mudgee.
Yeah.
So tell me about the link between Mudgee Jail and the hangings and this shop that you had.
Right. The house, as I said, 1857. And when I was researching that, I found that the builder was a fellow named Andrew McCauley, and he had contracts, government contracts, for major building works in Mudgee, which included the courthouse and several large buildings, private residences, and the Mudgee Jail. So, yeah, that's the link between my house and the jail.
And when 1857, that shop that you were talking about, your house you lived in, that supplied miners through the area?
Yes, it was purpose-built. The fellow, Richard Crossing, commissioned the building to be erected to supply miners and people working to the gold diggings at Hill End and Maru with supplies. And the supplies ranged from rum to flour and sugar and shovels.
So we might leave the Hanged in Armidale of the series to last, but we'll talk about the book that you did in 2023 called Hanged in Tamworth. Tell me about Tamworth. I want to know the number of people maybe that were hanged in Tamworth, if you can remember, and maybe some of the characters there, maybe there's any story behind that.
Well, actually, Tamworth was interesting that they had two places that they hang people. One of the buildings is now the Police Boys Club, or was, if they had built a new building, and the other being a small jail. And a lot of these jails started out as slab huts. They weren't, as we imagine, max jails now, and there was a lot of escapes. There was, you know, people just walking out the front door or that sort of thing. There was six people hanged in Tamworth, and they were generally murderers.
What period are we talking about for the hangings in Tamworth? Would it be fair to say it was in the late 1800s, early 1900s?
Absolutely, because my period of time that I research is those dates between 1870 and 1910.
That's pretty accurate for me, I think, Helen. And for the listeners out there, we're talking about talking to Helen Cotty on Community Spotlight, and we're talking about her series that she's researched extensively and written, Hanged in the Various Jails, Mudgee, Armidale, Tamworth, Dubbo, and a biography of John Derren Dick, Governor of Mudgee Jail. Now, I might just jump to some of your studies. You went to UNE?
I did. That was during COVID. Unfortunately, I had about a year of study and then COVID hit.
That was 2019-2021, and you studied history,
of all
things.
Well, it incorporated the history of the area, of the First Nations people, all that sort of thing, and it all fed into what I research.
It all fed into your thirst for knowledge and that path of research on hangmen. So tell me about the hangman of Dubbo.
That was Robert Rice Howard as well. I started, we had a guest hangman as well and an assistant hangman, et cetera, but they generally, the people that I research were hanged by Robert Rice Howard.
Oh, right. So once we actually got away after 1870 from anybody could do a hanging who wanted to,
yes,
or put their hand up and botched many, we went to Robert Rice Howard, Nosy mm-hmm. Bob, and he must have travelled around between all the jails doing all the hangings.
Then
there wasn't a huge amount, because you mentioned there was four in Mudgee and seven in Tamworth. How many in Dubbo?
Eight.
Eight in Dubbo.
Eight in Dubbo. The thing is about his, there was always someone to be hanged somewhere. And sometimes he would turn up and the execution was cancelled and then he'd have to travel back. He was a bit of a drinker. He enjoyed his travels. The bulletin newspaper used to follow him around, and he was known to botch executions as well. One in Dubbo was a decapitation he botched.
Community spotlighting on Helen Cotty, who has written a series of books, Hanged in Mudgee, Hanged in Armidale, Hanged in Tamworth and Hanged in Dubbo. And it's very interesting. We've been talking Nosy Bob. So, Helen, tell me about Nosy Bob. Did you actually get into his skin?
I think I did, because the more I found out about the man as a man, the better I liked him. I know that he executed people, but he took that job on professionally. He tried to do his best. He actually hanged one a man that he knew and worked with, and he said to this man, I'm sorry that I have to do this. And the man said to him, I'm glad it's you. Because his reputation was, at times, except in the newspapers, a professional.
So being a professional, how much did he get paid per hanging?
He didn't get paid per hanging. Previously to him, people got £10, which was a lot of money pre-1870, and they were paid £10 per person or per job. When he was appointed, he was salaried, so he got paid £125 per year, which was still a lot of money. And he managed in his lifetime to buy houses for all his children, to own property, etc. He did well.
Well, I suppose that sort of speaks about it was a profession.
Yes.
It was a legal profession back
yes.
then. It was something that had to be done and had to be done well, because
yes.
we talked about the botching of some of the hangings prior.
Yeah.
And even Nosy Bob had a botching botched hanging himself. What else can you tell me? Where is he buried? I think you mentioned...
He's buried at Waverley. He was born in Norfolk. People think that he was born in Norwich. He wasn't. Born in Marham. He was one of quite a few children, and they ended up as farm labourers. And then advertising was rife in the newspapers asking for people to come to Australia. And he was married with one child. He decided to come out. And his expertise with horses and carriages meant that he could start his own business in Sydney.
Did he have any particular tools of the trade, so to speak? Obviously a rope. Can you tell me anything about the tools of the trade?
Yes, I can. Each hangman in each state was given a hangman's box, and in the box was several ropes. They were made of jute, soap, because the ropes had to be the night before rubbed with soap to make them slippery and easier to manipulate. He had ties, which, because the people had their arms tied behind their back but above their elbows. In the case of women, they were tied around their skirts, so there was no embarrassment as they floated down. All sorts of things like that were in the hangman's box.
We're probably getting a little bit morbid, but is there a legal distance that someone has to fall to have an effective hanging?
Yes, there was. Previously, it was almost guesswork. Oh, you're a big fellow, or, we need to dig the pit underneath the gallows a bit deeper because you're going to drop further, etc., etc. Then there was a formula made for your height, weight, how long your drop should be. And it was a table. I have a copy of it framed on my office wall. Man, woman, height, etc. So there was a formula.
I knew there probably was. How many a year did he do?
There was no average per year. like everything, he just didn't know how many he was going to go to. But in his career between 1872 and 1906, he hanged 72 people.
72, and of those, how many botched?
There was probably half a dozen. There was one decapitation and several stranglings.
Did you ever find out why he might have slipped up, so to speak?
Well, sometimes it was the erection of the gallows wasn't correct, or the trap didn't open properly and the person slipped sideways, or the person put up a... One fellow managed to get out of his ties and put his hand up between the rope and his neck. And, of course, he strangled. One fellow had to be brought back up and hanged all over again.
Very gruesome. So I don't make any apologies, but I hope it hasn't made you squeezy, those people listening in to Helen Cotty and her experience in researching the hangings in New South Wales, or some of the hangings, in a book series that she's written from 2020 to 2024, Hanged in Mudgee, Hanged in Armidale, Hanged in Tamworth, Hanged in Dubbo, and a biography of John Doon Dick, the governor of Mudgee Jail. Now, tell me about that last one, the biography. What's that all about?
Well, it was interesting that when I was researching Hanged in Mudgee, I found out that the John Doon Dick was appointed from the UK, but nobody knew anything about him. They didn't know where he came from, why he got the job, why he got the top job. So I researched him and found all that out. But also, he'd been arrested for attempted murder. What he was doing was wages for the staff would come to the local bank. It was in his name. He would collect the money. He would distribute them. And he came from a very wealthy family, and he didn't manage his money well, and he was taking money from the wages of the men. And one man decided he was going to ask him, "Where's my wages?" John Dick got his gun and shot at him and clipped him in the jaw, which was attempted murder. And he went to court, he was found guilty, and he was to be hanged on his own gallows. As it turns out, he had very, very good connections in the UK, and the governors of Australia, different ones, and he managed to get his sentence of death reduced to 10 years in jail. And then he disappeared, and it took me 4 years to find out where he went, how he died, where he was buried.
And where is he buried?
He's buried in Kensal Green in London, one of the seven major cemeteries around there. And he's actually buried with his brother and sister. His sister never married. His brother was a colonel in the army. And John Doon Dick also he went to officer cadet school, and he was in the army. His father was the Surgeon General of the British Army, and he travelled all that. I've done all that. I found out all that.
How long was Doon Dick in Mudgee Jail as the governor?
About 4 years.
Right, so a small stint.
Oh, yes.
And what dates were that, do you think?
Late 1800s. Yes.
Well, I've left the good to last, the best to last.
Oh, goodness.
Hanged in Armidale.
Uh-huh.
Now, tell me about the book Hanged in Armidale. Paint me a picture about where the jail was, how long it operated for, what years maybe.
The jail was actually where these men were hanged, is where the Teachers College is now. I've been underneath the building to have a look at the foundations and that. There's very little left. But that jail was purpose-built as a country jail. It was a major jail. Previous to that, the jail was down next door to where the police station is now. And along from there, where the old stables, is actually where the police horses were kept. And where the post office is now, there was also a lock-up.
So who instigated the moving of the jail from down in Beattie Street Mall up to the NECOM site?
I think it was availability of land. I don't know who instigated it, but it was funding. There was money there. They could build it. The land was there. It was high up on the hill. It could be seen. It was prestigious. They had a lot of people come to look at the jail, and it was going to be the jail. That was until Tamworth got the bigger jail.
What years are we talking about for the Armidale jail?
Well, the Armidale jail is the late 1800s as well.
And it closed?
Came derelict. What happened was the prisoners were taken to Tamworth, and so there was less and less clients in the Armidale jail, and it became a holding jail before the prisoners went on to the bigger jails. And it just became derelict and an eyesore, and campaigns were made to have the jail pulled down, and it was.
Was it the demand for the jail because there was a lot of lawlessness around Armidale in the late 1800s?
Definitely. The terrible, terrible fights between the First Nations people and farmers, and the expansion of the settlement areas, and Armidale was on the track north, and so it was like a major highway, and easy pickings for bush rangers or people who just wanted to take what they didn't own.
I think that's what they say about the bush ranger. If you didn't really want to earn an honest keep and couldn't find a job to earn an honest keep, you turned to bush ranging and just holding up people and taking what they had.
Yes, I think that's definitely right. I think that's right.
What sort of staffing would have been at the jail, like number of policemen?
They were warders. The policemen were in different police stations in town. There was one opposite the railway station now. There was a police station there. There were police in the jail, but mainly they were just warders. They were people employed to look after the prisoners, including matrons. And matrons, very important people to all the jails in New South Wales, and were generally the wives of the governors of the jail. And they looked after the welfare of the men if they were sick, making sure they had clean clothes, not all the time, but that was their job. Food, all that sort of thing, the welfare.
So you're talking about the welfare of the prisoners?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So we actually are moving from what my mind is sort of running at the late 1800s, is that they were possibly kept in shocking conditions. But what you're saying is they were kept in pretty well cared for.
I think there was the idea of care. However, being in those cells were freezing cold. They were issued with blankets and that sort of thing. But the sanitation wasn't there, and if they were in isolation, it was pretty, pretty awful for the prisoners to be in jail.
And the types of crime that would be from petty crime through to obviously murder, and then the hangman's noose in Armidale.
Yes, there was all sorts of crime. Sometimes they were people who were destitute, who were on the street, who perhaps drunks. There's cases of children, you know, being taken to the jail. There was nowhere else to take them. There was a case of a woman who was an habitual drunk who would just keep revolving door and go back to the jail. Theft, you know, was a big crime, because if you have nothing and you take from somebody who's also poor, you know, crime like that was rife.
So let's talk about the hangings. How many hangings were Nosey Bob perform in the Armidale jail?
All but one. He didn't do the... He had already passed away when the last hanging took place.
So how many hangings in total in the Armidale jail?
Six, I think.
Six. And they were all for murder?
Yes. I'm saying yes because I'm trying to put the faces and the crime together and, yes, the murders.
Well, let's talk about the faces. Who were they? Who were the people hung at the Armidale jail, either by Nosy Bob or somebody else?
Well, there was a young fellow from Bingara who stabbed his girlfriend to death. The saddest one, I have to say, is a young fellow who was only 16, and his name was Icorn, and he came from just outside Armidale, and he was accused, and possibly rightly accused, of the rape of an elderly lady at Samaras Ponds, and because there was a community out there which doesn't exist, a village that doesn't exist anymore. And he was only 16, and he couldn't read and write. His father never sent him to school. They were German immigrants. He did attack this woman. But I think that was sad, and I've tried to find his grave for a long time. I haven't located it yet because they get buried outside consecrated ground.
Oh, interesting. Did any of them turn to the religion at the end of before their demise at the hangman's noose?
No, I haven't found anybody that's to me is a sort of modern thing where, you know, I'm reformed, blah, blah, blah. A lot of these people, they rationalised it and said, well, I'm going to hang tomorrow, you know.
Or maybe it's a bit of a stereotype that we get from the popular media and the films that we watch, because you mentioned that one guy down in one of the jails had put his hand up into the hangman's noose and he had to be hung again out of his things. I've seen that on a movie. Yeah. So this is where these things come from. And I don't know how many movies I've seen. A person to be hanged turns to religion, and Shawshank Redemption was an interesting one. It's a great movie, but certainly there's some hanging going on there. I suppose when you think about the hangman, you know, laws in our society has grown, and our social norms and values and what we see as being right and proper and a law. Mm. Now we don't have hangings, so it's no longer those horrible things that used to happen in our early part of our colonisation up to early 1900s maybe.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we don't have any hangings anymore. We're a lot better society in many ways, however, in other ways, we may be going backwards. But anyway, I might just now jump to any concluding remarks about the Hangman series before we tell people where we can get a copy of these fantastic books.
Well, there's so much research that I've done, I think I'll be writing to the end of time. But the series will go on. You know, the next book is Hanged in Bathurst, and I'll be continuing on doing that.
And there was a lot more people hung in Bathurst than these other smaller jails?
Generally, yes. I'm going to say yes because I haven't started yet collating who and who was hanged in Bathurst as yet.
So thank you, Helen, for coming in and speaking about what some might think is very morbid and ghoulish, but it is fact. It did happen. You've done the research.
Yeah.
It's all on the record. We've got four books here. Hanged in the series, Mudgee, Armidale, Tamworth and Dubbo, and the biography of the Governor of Mudgee Jail.
Mm-hmm.
Those books can be all available from Boo Books?
Yes, yes. Yvonne down there kindly keeps a good stock of my books.
Right, so go down and see Yvonne at Boo Books. Now, Boo Books, for those that don't know, is down next to our Reconciliation Fountain in the old Commonwealth Bank building in the Central Mall of Armidale. It's the Hanged In series, Hanged in Mudgee, Armidale, Tamworth and Dubbo. I'm sure you'll find it. But you also can get it online direct from you.
Yes.
So if you visit crimeandpunishmentaustralia.com, you'll be able to take a payment and post a copy out to anybody who wants it.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Helen. It's been a journey. I've enjoyed it. Always good to have a little bit of ghoulishness on a Friday. It's a pity it's not a Friday the 13th or a Black Friday. All right. Thank you, and we'll go back to our normal transmission. Again, thanks for coming in to be part of Community Spotlight.
Wonderful. Thank you.
If you missed it or want to hear it again, visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.